welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we'll be talking with Teltone recording artist and Chicago Blues Hall of Fame member, Sam Cockrell. We'll hear cuts from his new CD, Trying to Make a Living, Playing My Guitar, and a live in-studio performance. Let's get started. All right, Sam Cockrell, welcome to the Farmhouse Studios.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Everybody knows you as a bass player sitting there with a six string. Can you talk about the guitar or your relationship with all the different instruments?
Well, yeah, it's simple. I mean, you know, being a student of guys like you and everybody else that plays this instrument over the years, you know, as a songwriter, it's very important to have some kind of idea how it works and, you know, to create your own thoughts and just transfer the information. I mean, this is the A no matter where you play it. And if you can hear chords, you know, stuff like that, you know, and it's, like I said, some guys will, you know, they just kind of get stuck on what they don't want to learn. And like for me, I have to know chords in order to know changes and compose stuff. I mean, so I play music. I play the bass for a living, but, you know, I could probably go to certain places and be a really pretty good mediocre rhythm player.
We've seen some different levels of skill at the jam session of Harlem Animal Lounge, so I'm sure that,
yes,
that you could...
I could fit in there.
Or maybe be a little better,
not
too.
Not just there. A lot of places.
Yeah.
No, really. But, I mean, my first love is the bass, you know, of course. But I won't limit myself to anything, you know. Again, like I said, you know, the guitar is just another part of me. It's an extension of who I am and what I do. And if I get together and we work out something, hey, Jim, this is what the guitar part sounds like in my head. Take this and see what you can do with it. You know, and from there, you just see what happens.
So let's take it back to the beginning.
Yeah.
How did you get started in music?
Well, I'm the only one in my family who is musically inclined. I grew up in a Robert Taylor home. That's south side of Chicago. Probably in the, I was there as a kid, of course, with my parents, 62 through 67, that big snowstorm we had where you can jump off anything and not hit the ground. And I started developing a desire to want to play music after watching the Jackson 5. That really inspired me because I like, wow, who are these guys? Because I was into sports like everybody else. And then when I saw that, I was kind of hooked in, and from that point, I had been struggling and trying to be this and that. I started off on a guitar and realized that it really wasn't going to be the instrument for me, and everybody wanted to play the guitar, so we needed a bass player. So out of necessity, I became the bass player, and now the bass has become such a progressive instrument that it's like playing guitar, depending on the application that you're involved in. So, you know, I think you and I talked about this before. A lot of young guys will see me, or guys in general, and they'll see what they want to see and not really what it is that I'm doing. You listen to my records, like anyone else, I'm singing and holding down the line, but they usually come in and catch me soloing, and they think that's what I do. It is, but it's not really what I do.
It's the difference between a live setting and a recording.
And having discipline to play the parts that make the record what it is or to be part of the band. So I think that they get the two confused, and the fact that I am the leader of my band gives me certain liberties that if a guy in your band wanted to do that, he'd have to think twice, not that you would say anything, but it would be against the grain, sort of, because it's not the norm.
Not traditional.
It's not traditional, whereas I'm like, I can ad-lib my parts and do something off the cuff and be creative because it's the way that we play. But for a normal guy, it wouldn't be right because it seemed like that's out of place. You know what I mean? Say if you were playing with some guy like BB or something, he's got a set thing in his head. You do something that's not on the menu, he say, hey, what was that?
It's the BB show. It's on the bass player.
Exactly.
Show. Yeah.
Exactly. So that too, that since you said that, there are a lot of great bass players everywhere. A lot of them are good friends of mine. But the difference is most of those guys play for somebody. The guys that are in my band, they work for me. We work together, but it's the Sam Cockrell band. So I don't have to worry about some guy cutting his eyebrow because I set the music up for me to be able to do it that way.
Right. Yeah, yeah, a lot of band leaders are singers, guitar players.
Exactly.
And it's more rare for a bass player.
True.
So that puts you in a unique position.
Well, I mean, It's good. You said that. I would say that it just gives me a position to do things without worry, more or less. Mm-hmm. You know, I can just say, oh, wow. Okay, I don't think I could have done that in his band, but that was cool that you did that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the Jackson 5. They were inspiration to me. I remember getting the Super Sugar Crisp. They'd have the records on the back of the cereal.
Yeah, remember I remember
you
that.
Cut
yeah.
that off?
I remember that.
Free record, man. You get cereal and music.
There you go, man. And you see, know? It's funny you should say that because it's like anything else. Music is about vibration. It's the way it makes you feel. It doesn't matter who's doing it. If they touch you in some kind of way, because we could probably talk forever about all of our influences right. or the people that we really, really dig. I mean, because if I could play any kind of music I really wanted to and make a living, I'd be in playing Steely Dan music with those guys. I love all of that stuff.
Right.
I mean, there's so many, but I mean, I really love, I'm not a jazz player, but I love what they do, and it's just beautiful.
I mean, Louis Armstrong said there's two kinds of music, good music and bad music.
There you go.
And I think it's all relative to your taste and what you like. I mean, it doesn't, you can't, so many people want to put it in a particular, you know, genre.
Right, or
I
box.
Listen to blues,
yeah.
I listen, you know.
No.
And I know that you're not just a blues player, you play music, you're
a
musician.
I try to play stuff that I think will help me in my quest to become this or to work, more or less. I've given up that idea of being rich and famous after, you know, you realize certain things that you have to do that really have nothing to do with music. You know, you have to make a choice somewhere. So those guys that are doing well from a distance, I applaud all of that. But there's certain things that you just, I don't know, you just shouldn't ever do. You know, you still got to be a man and look at yourself. And I don't want to give away anything that I wrote and fought to make. And at the end of the day, I don't own any of it. I mean, there's no real deal out there that says sell everything you own and have nothing to show for it later. That may not happen to everybody, but we know from history it's happened to a lot.
A lot of people.
To a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, just a lot of unscrupulous record companies, and they're still doing it. So it's nice to kind of have your own thing and your own artistic freedom rather than saying, Sam, you got to do this, and I want you to write a song like this. You write a song because you feel it.
The way you feel it, right. Yeah. And when you take someone's money, you also have to take their direction unless it's agreed upon that, hey, let me do this. I appreciate the capital. But if it means you're going to be trying to dictate to me what I got to do, then let me do it myself because, you know, then it's not really me doing it.
Well, it's different different definitions of success.
I mean, to
be able to play your own music and write your own music and perform and release your own music versus somebody telling you what to do, and, you know, it's I think that's what makes you an artist.
Well, you're right, and since you said that as well, I mean, I'm thinking about everything that I'm wearing now is due to me playing music. I don't work a 9-to-5, and there's nothing against guys that do. But I figure I play well enough not to have to want to get up early in the morning, go someplace that I'm not interested in being and being a pain in the butt for people because I'm not being the, hey, how you doing? You know, and this is what I am. This is what I do, and this is what I like to continue to do. So every night I had to pick this up and practice and do a note or two so I don't forget stuff. There are a lot of great players just everywhere, you know, and – you know, if you're one of those guys, good. If you're not, then it really doesn't matter. Like you said, success is different for everyone.
Right.
You know, if I can get up and continue to do this like what we're doing now, that's a success story. I don't have to go someplace again, and I don't want to be and do something I don't want to do in order to eat or whatever, pay the light bill or whatever. So, you know, it's still a work in progress after all these many years, but it's been good.
That's excellent. I mean, yeah. I was telling someone the other day to go to work and show up and plug in your instrument and people smile and dance, that's a good day.
That is a great day.
You bring joy to the world.
It's
you
a
know,
great
that,
day,
that,
yeah.
That's a very good day.
It's a great day.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the record.
Okay, sure.
Tell me about the record.
Okay, well, you know how it is, the music record business. If you're an independent, and I am at this point, it's difficult to try to do everything and be successful at it because it requires money and, of course, time. This last record that I just finished trying to make a living playing my guitar, I thought that title would be very catchy and everybody could understand what that was about.
It's real.
And it took a while in the making because the last recording that I actually got on the marketplace was in 2001. A couple things happened in that year. My father passed away. I was in a transitional period with the band that I had. And I just needed some time to kind of refocus my attention because people weren't buying records and CDs like they were in the past. And I had to figure out, okay, if you spend all this money, you got to have a vehicle to get this music out, right? And you got to have a reason to want to invest all that time to places to play. And right now, you know, with the way the thing is set up, the agent has kind of like empowered himself over the artist. And I never really quite understood that, because he can't make a dime unless we show up to get his commission. But musicians really haven't figured it out. We've given him power over us that we're calling him constantly trying to get work, when it should be the other way around. Right. He should be calling us so he can make his money. So that game that we play like that kind of puts us in a weird, precarious situation, because a lot of guys don't like to share information. They want to hold on. Man, you can't own a gig. None of that.
It shouldn't be competitive.
It shouldn't be competitive.
Be cooperative, yeah.
You know, at this age, we should be trying to help each other as much as we can, because the truth of the matter is, if somebody likes me and they don't like you, or like you and don't like me, hey, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You can be, people didn't like Michael Jackson. He was the biggest star in the world.
Right.
Doesn't matter. So I try to help with, hey, man, call this guy, do this, because it's just going to make me look better if I can help him bring good people in and help you along the way. Not that you look for it to happen, but, hey, man, this will be perfect for you, man. Get this guy a call. I have his ear, so now he's going to talk to you. So those kind of things like that. But we don't get that kind of cooperation because we're too competitive with one another, and we're getting closer and closer to not being here instead of working together.
It's about relationships and friendships. And I consider you a friend.
Same here. Share
information.
Oh, all the time.
But I know so many other guys, I mean, like you say, they keep it close to their chest. All you got to do is open up the newspaper and see where the gigs are.
Exactly.
You know, it's not a secret.
But, I mean, it would be a lot more helpful, especially if I got a guy's ear and you're trying to talk to him. Hey, man, my buddy Jim's been trying to call you, man. Answer the phone.
Right.
We both know how it is when you call a guy and he won't answer or won't say, hey, man, look, you've called me 1,000 times. Don't ever call me again. That's all he's got to do is tell me that.
Right.
Don't take a job where you have to talk to people and then don't want to do it. If you try to call somebody, man, about working, and that's the key thing, working, you're not looking for a handout. People need you in these places to entertain their audience. I think any one of us would be an asset to any party or club, depending on what they wanted. So if I got to jump through hoops to call you to get a gig there, something that will make you look good, then maybe you shouldn't be the guy booking this venue if you don't want to talk to musicians or people trying to get a job in this place. I'm going to leave it at that, but I think some guys will figure out what I'm talking about.
It's like a restaurant without food, and the guy won't take any phone calls from the distributor.
The vendors, right. Well, how can you be successful without food?
Right.
You can't be.
All right, let's get back to this.
Okay,
restaurant.
All right, man.
Trying to make a living playing my guitar.
Yes.
I mean, you've got some good musicians down here, and these guys, they're not from Chicago, right?
Well, the bulk of this cast is from Delaware. One of my good friends, Joe Lasort, who a lot of the guys in Chicago know, is the producer along with myself. Great guitar player, engineer. And he's been trying to get me to come to Delaware, Jim, for over 20-something years. I said, man, what's in Delaware? The studio. I said, oh, yeah, we got studios here, too.
Yeah.
So he books this gig down in Wilmington at the Blue Parrot, which turned out to be a really great place. And then I went to Philly, the Twisted Tail in Philly. And from that point, we started talking about the record because I was actually there. We started laying down some tracks, and, you know, I'd already knew in my head what it was going to sound like, but he didn't. So we get halfway going, and so the piano player in my group, Daniel Tamian, flew in to Delaware, and we started really going hard at it. And the rest of the guys, like I said, Brett Scholl on the drums, Billy Myers on the drums, Lynn Dalton on guitar, Roger Gerk on guitar and vocals, of course, Joe Lasort, and Daryl. Oddly enough, Daryl Brown on keyboards, another Daryl Brown. And the album started coming to life, and I like, wow. And then I thought, man, that was like 15 years later before I made an attempt, as I explained about my father and some other things. I was just in a place where I needed to kind of grieve and do some stuff and step back from being a band leader. And I took some jobs with some other guys, you know, just to kind of, you know, get my thoughts together. And then, you know, I kind of got challenged by a good friend who said, man, you know, you haven't had an original thought since Colorblind, which I knew that was a lie because I'm sitting on all this music.
Right.
And it's just amazing because when you listen to stuff, And again, I respect everything about music, man. But there's some things that are just different. See, this album, we were talking about it last night. Sometimes it's hard to find a venue to play certain things. Although every music is blues rooted, that there's some people just have a base mentality about what they think blues is. And anything overly progressive in their minds doesn't fit the mold.
Right. It's not 12 bars.
It's not 12 bars. Yeah. Doesn't make it a bad thing, but for them... You remember the movie with Charlie Parker when he first started playing bebop, when the drummer took the cymbal off and threw it at him and said, "Hey, man, what's that? Bird. Bird. There you go. Thank you, Daryl." And, you know, that was the same kind of thing. I feel like I'm in one of those kind of things because I respect 12-bar and 8-bar blues. I love it. But as a player, I want to challenge myself sometimes and use some of my skills that I've learned and apply it to some of the music. And sometimes that takes me outside of the loop. Although you can come see me, Jim, and I'm playing all of the standards all night and says sometimes, you know, and I think to people, I say, "Are you listening?" And it just perplexes me sometimes. So I just say, okay, like B.B. King said, they never liked him either. The purists, they never liked him.
So maybe talk about some of the tunes that are on this record that maybe aren't 12-bar blues. That are, I mean, it's all. What would you characterize? This is R&B. This is just Sam Cockrell, or what?
See, that's what I think. I think it's twinges of a little bit of everything, which kind of culminates into who I am. Now, if people have known me over time, seen me, then they could tell you, well, that's just what he does, you
right.
know. But there are twinges that you're going to hear soul, you're going to hear some jazz, blues, R&B, you know. So, I mean, the best way to do that is to come back on your show one day. So, you know, I have my friend Sam here, and I asked him a question about the music. I've heard it, and this is what I think about it, because it ultimately comes down to what other people think. I can explain it all day. To you, it's going to be something else. No, you sound like this. I say, okay, thanks. And, you know, when they tell you that, the conversation is over now because they've already defined you.
Yeah, you get 10 different people and they have 10 different opinions.
This is very true. Yeah. So whatever it makes you think about or feel, then that's what it is.
Trying to make a living. guitar, trying to make a living.
Question mark. People hear that right there. What's the first thing you think of other than a question mark, genre-wise, when you hear this chord?
It's more like jazz, right?
Well, yeah, but it's it'll put you in them jazz mind. You don't hear a lot of R&B guys using this that have a blues mentality, I would say. Not that they couldn't do it, but it's just not going to be. You're not going to hear this in a 12 bar.
Yeah.
You're just not. You're going to hear this more, maybe. You hear stuff like that.
So blues has a particular structure, and what you're creating is you're busting out of that structure.
Well, yeah, on this particular album, because if you go back to my first album, I'm in the Business, that's 12-bar blues, you know, but with a little progression on it. But, you know, people like Billy Branch, Carl Weathersby, and Maurice John Vaughn, Brother John, a lot. So, I mean, it's 12-bar blues, and then radio received it really well, and so I was thinking, I live in Chicago, I got to do some bluesy stuff if I want to get somebody's attention so I can progress to the next step, which was Colorblind. I recorded that album with the Memphis Horns.
Nice.
God rest both of their souls, Andrew Love and Wayne Jackson, they're both no longer with us, but they were with the Memphis Horns, and so that was more R&B and soulful, and with some blues on it as well. And this next album is just, you know, for me, I really couldn't put it in a situation. It's just music. I don't want to say it's good, because someone else has to say that. You know, I say it's quality music that you can embrace or not. You know, it's up to you as a listener. But I think it's pretty good.
How about I'm from Chicago? I mean, that's a statement.
Yeah. Well, in my mind, I was thinking again. Don't kill me, blues purists. Whenever you travel, and I know you heard this before, even if you're not from Chicago, if you live anywhere near Chicago, can the band play Sweet Home Chicago? And I'm thinking like, yeah, but I don't know if we're going to do it. Then the guy will come up and hand me a $100 bill,
yeah.
And I start counting off. But other than that, I figured we need another song, man. Somebody needs to dare write another song, an anthem about Chicago, you know.
Summertime in the Windy City, the sun is shining, the girls sure look pretty. Everybody's grilling in their backyard, getting their drink on, playing a game of cards, singing groups singing on the corner, young boys selling dimes and quarters. Remember old Blue Eyes, the chairman of the boards, the song he sang, the town he adored. I'm from Chicago, the Windy City is my home.
musicians in Love Chi-Town. North side, south side, plenty of work around. If you got the goods, you gonna get paid. The best stand out, what more can I say? Bloodshed and violence, the streets were a mess. During the era of Capone and Ness. Do you remember Earth, Wind and Fire? The rock band Chicago, the Grand Park riots. I'm from Chicago, the Windy City is my home. Yes, it is. City, the sun is shining, the girls sure look pretty. Everybody's grilling in their backyard, getting their drink on, playing a game of cards, singing groups singing on the corner, young boys selling dimes and quarters. Remember old Blue Eyes, the chairman of the boys, the song he sang, the town he adored. I'm from Chicago, the Windy City is my home. Yes, it is. Working musicians, they love Chi-Town. North side, south side, plenty of work around. If you got the goods, you're gonna get paid. The best stand out, what more can I say? Bloodshed and violence, the streets were a mess. During the era of Capone and Ness. Do you remember Earth, Wind and Fire? The rock band Chicago, the Grand Park riots. I'm from Chicago, the Windy City is my home. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. Home of the blues. Man, come on down to the Harlem Avenue Lounge, man. Kinks and Minds, Legends too. You gotta check it out, man. Not only that, man, go check out the Sox, the Cubs, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, man. We got it all, man. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. Texas is great. Memphis is too. But everybody in the whole world know y'all. Chicago's the home of the blues. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago.
I'm going to talk about the bass and your relationship to the bass and you know, what kind of instrument you play, and a 6-string, 4-string, 5-string.
The way that I play, or the way that people perceive it, man, you ought to play a 6-string. I said, well, most of my heroes all play 4-strings still. They probably have a 5, as I do, but I don't get to play it much. I mean, I haven't fallen in love with it, but I knew that I probably needed to get one at some point in case I did, or a recording required it, right? So, you know, the 4-string bass is just part of who I am. I mean, I want to say I'm might be a little lazy and wanting to kind of like learn the instrument over again. That one little string just kind of can change your whole philosophy about how you approach it, because it's different. to me, when I first heard the five string, and they had a lot of great players, but I thought the five string was perfect for ballads. You know, that low note
right.
that you want to get in those ballads would give you that big warm feeling. Boom, there you go. Yeah, just like Daryl said. And so, you know, I said, okay, if I'm going to get one, I'm going to get one that I perceive to be good. I bought a Lakeland. I try to buy really good equipment. And sometimes, you know, we get caught up with the name on the headstock. But Lakeland's a good bass. A lot of the top guys in the world play it. And, you know, I have one. Haven't really fully committed to it. I might one day. I play the Music Man bass. Most people know me for that. I play a Fender Jazz. I have an Alembic, Stanley Clark, PV Accelerator. I have several Music Men and the jazz bass. So I would just say they're all trees with paint and the electronics in it. So it's really no big. If it feels good, man, then you should buy it and play it. If it don't feel good, then don't, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it'll never work for you.
It's never going to work for you the way you want it to. You know, you can't do what he does, because that bass is designed for what he plays, and he's comfortable with it, and vice versa. So I always tell young guys, buy something that you feel comfortable playing, regardless of who you like. It may not work for you.
You mentioned some your heroes. Who would you cite as inspiration or hero?
I'd have to say for bass is Stanley Clark. I mean, when I first saw him in concert, I mean, like everybody else, I was, you know, trying to figure out. But I said, man, that's it right there. If I'm going to play this instrument that's supposed to be regulated to the back, I'm going to do what he's doing, or try to. His tone just, Jim, blew me out the water. And his approach, because like I said, you don't go to the concert thinking the bass player is going to be the guy wailing
up
and
front,
killing it
yeah.
up front, and the guitar player is back there waiting for him to, okay, you can play now. So I said, oh, man, that was it. So, boom, I went out right away and got those records and got the needle turntable, thing of the past. He's got one downstairs, though. And just started learning those records, man. Learning those records, and then just trying to hone my skills. And then over time, you know, you started hearing stuff that you didn't understand, because you didn't really have enough musical education in your head. So now those notes I'm hearing, they're like this big. Before, they were like this. And now I'm just kind of incorporating stuff that he might do, or reflections of his sound. Because, you know, he's still around. But it's just little things I do to say, oh, man, that sounds like this or that. And I always say, yeah, well, that was the guy that really inspired me to play that style. But then there was Larry Graham, Louis Johnson. I mean, God, plenty of Chris Squire from Yes, Abraham Laborio, Bernard Edwards, Verding White. Man, I mean, the guy from Rare Earth, that he did that bass solo on Get Ready. The guy that played in John Coffey's band, Scorpio. Bob Babbitt, one of the great players. He just passed away not too long ago. Great session player for Motown. So, I mean, it's just, and then not only the bass, it's the guitar. The first time I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan, I was visiting a friend, Mike Wheeler's house, and he put this record on. We were over there doing something. I said, man, who was that? He said, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I said, oh, man, that dude is killing. He was playing Scuttlebutt. The next day, Jim, I went out and bought everything he made, because I was just, he just, that guitar just blew me out of the door. So I said, I got to learn it on bass. So my thought was, I got to learn how to do that on the bass.
So that same passion, fire, and intensity.
Right.
Transfer that to the bass.
Transfer it to the bass, man, because he's an aggressive player. And if you're an aggressive player, you're going to think that way. Your plan's going to be a little bit different, because, you know, when you play with clarity and distinction, you can't make a lot of mistakes because people can hear it. A lot of guys are afraid of those tones. That's why some of them are muddy, because you can't really hear what they're doing if they make a mistake. But I never worry about making a mistake, because that's how you keep from making them. Thank you.
I really enjoyed I've Got to Make Some Changes. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, R&B and soul, for sure. With a hint of jazz. And I don't like to compare, you know. And
you just create it.
These are not my words. But when the albums are reviewed, people have a tendency to say that some of the stuff reminds them of Robert Cray. And I say, well, if you have a guy singing in that range, doing that kind of music, it's going to be one of those comparisons, whether you think it's fair or not. O.V. Wright was a guy he was compared to. So when you start singing all that kind of soul and that upper register, it's going to remind people who's doing it right now. And for me, that's a compliment. And, you know, it wasn't a conscious thing. It's just what you do. I mean, I've been singing like that before he was famous, but just not enough people knew about it.
Right.
So now it appears that, you know, I'm doing it because he did it. And I'm a fan of his music.
Sure.
You know,
it's a good, it's a great comparison.
Sure, yeah. So I would say on the strength, it would put you in the mind of something that he might do, you know, something along those lines he might do. But I felt we needed a nice, soulful song with a twist to it.
Such a long time, but you're messing all up with your cheating line. Girl, things between us can never ever be the same, cause I just don't think that I could ever trust you again. That's it, girl, it's over. I'm so tired of wasting my time. I gave you everything, I treated you like a queen. Don't love you anymore. Time, but you messed it all up with your cheating lying. Girl, things between us can never ever be the same, cause I just don't think that I could ever trust you again. That's it, girl, it's over. I'm so tired of wasting my time. I gave you everything, I treated you like a queen. I gotta
I have seen you on the bandstand during breaks. Take musicians and help them. Show. I mean, you've shown me chords. You're a bass player, and I'm like, 13th chord? What's that? You know? Right. But I've seen you with young musicians, horn players, you know, drummers, whatever. Just so I think in some ways, you know, you're a teacher.
I like helping, man, because I think if I can share my experience, and I didn't have a lot of people helping me, that's better for him. Now, you can take it or not, but if I consider you a friend, you know, then I say, man, hey, why don't you try this? Because that one little chord, you and I talked about it, could open up the door for you thinking about something else. And it's just a cool thing because when I started learning, I said, man, hey, try this. People show me stuff all the time.
Right.
You know, mostly piano players because I'm intrigued with that instrument. I'm never going to be what they are, but I like fooling around on it and learning stuff. And I'm pretty good on it, playing my own songs.
So you write on the guitar, but you also write on the piano.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Used to be strictly the bass, but nowadays it's the guitar and the piano. If I want to create certain things like that tune you asked me about. That came from being on the guitar.
Yeah.
And then some of the other stuff on the album was me fooling around on the electric piano.
Could you mention one of the songs that you wrote on the piano?
Well, all of the parts I wrote.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm saying me specifically starting on the piano to create the tune. Blindsided by Love is one of the tunes. Let's see, I'm trying to remember. You Can Have It All If You Play the Game, which is really a guitar tune, but some cool piano stuff in there. This Ain't Another Baby I Love You song. That's another one that started on the piano.
Staggering unemployment, no jobs anywhere. The future looks bleak, so many homeless in the street. John said he's waiting for the world to change, but it ain't ever gonna if they keep playing games. They've got to be accountable for what they say and do. They got to stop lying and start telling the truth. Working class people are feeling the pain. They've had enough. Things need to change. This ain't another Baby I Love You song. It's about real life, things in the world going on. Senseless killings, the discrimination, right-wing radicals spewing hate in the nation. Working class people are feeling the pain. They've had enough. Things need to change. From folks in Washington I don't trust. They say one thing but then do another. They ain't interested in you or me. About what we need. John said he's waiting for the world to change, but it ain't ever gonna if they keep playing games. They've got to be accountable for what they say and do. They've got to stop lying and start telling the truth. Working class people are feeling the pain. About real life, things in the world going on, senseless killings, discrimination.
How about let's talk about singing. Who are your influences for singing? You know, you talked about your the range of your voice is similar to Robert Cray or Ovie Wright. just in your head, and who did you inspire to when you first started singing?
As a young guy, it was probably Jermaine Jackson, you know, being a bass player, a young black guy, you know, and the fact that, I said, wait, these guys are making money and meeting all these women? All right. I'm singing all
Jermaine
his parts.
Jermaine had the better girls than Michael.
He did have better girls than Michael. Jim, I say, I'm singing all his parts. So that's kind of how that happened. And then as you get a little older and stuff, I mean, you look at guys like one of my favorite singers, period, is Peter Cetera, formerly of Chicago. Yeah. I mean, this dude, man, is just incredible. When he opens his mouth, I learn something about singing all the time. Then we're going to switch gears and go to, like, say, Marvin Gaye. We're going to talk about Buddy Miles, Sly Stone, Prince. Maurice White was a very underrated vocalist.
Right.
Very underrated. Peebo Bryson, Luther Vandross. I know I'm missing a few others. Tony Terry. That's an unknown guy for most, but he's a great balladeer. Falsetto singers, Russell Tompkins Jr., Bobby DeBarge of Switch, El DeBarge.
Curtis Mayfield.
Curtis Mayfield. Yeah. EJ from the group Enchantment.
I know you're a member of the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. It's funny because I don't think anybody ever grows up, you know, thinking, number one, you know, when I first started playing music, I had no idea I was going to be a blues player. Zero idea. It's like I woke up one day and all of a sudden all the funk players were playing blues. Then it dawned on me that, okay, well, that's where all the work is now. So that's kind of why we kind of migrated to some of those places. And I thought, I was trying to remember, when did this happen? Because I'm thinking like, man, we playing all this tower power stuff and all of a sudden now we're going. And I said, when did that happen?
All right, how about the future? The 2017 and beyond, what's in store for Sam Cockrell?
Right now, we're working on a new album, which this album is still relatively new, but, you know, we're working on a new record, and it's going to be called just a swing at people who still singing, still playing the blues, you know, like we ever stopped. So that's going to be on that. But it's going to be a lot of the same kind of songs, though. You know, a lot like this because we're progressively doing stuff that I think suits what I do, you know. And we can play, like I said, 12-bar blues all night long. There's nothing wrong with it. I think it's great. But for an original sound, I want to just kind of invest more into what that is. So the songs will be a lot simpler than what they were on the last album. And what I mean by that is that from the piano standpoint, a lot of guys now, some bands are playing, guys are playing in 3 and 4 bands to try to make ends meet. And it was really never that way back in the day. So one of the guys in my band does that, you know, because he's got to make a living. And so I don't try to get in the way of that. So we can't always have him there. And some of the songs are really intricate. So some other guy coming in to play the piano might not be able to have the same success that we want because he doesn't play that way. Doesn't mean he's not a great player, but he doesn't play that way. So I'm going to kind of put that in the background. Now, mind you, I wrote the parts, but finding a guy to play them is not always easy. So we relegate him to the background, and the piano parts become less important, and we focus more on the horns, my plan, and the vocals. That way we can always pick up anybody to come in and say, hey, do this, do that. We got a little chart for you. So then it makes it easier for us to keep going without worrying about not having that big hole on our music. Because he's such a great player.
Right. I mean, you hear about, I actually interviewed a guy, Sonny Lee, who used to play with a lot of the doo-wop groups.
Uh-huh.
And they go from town to town with charts.
Right.
You know, so it's the same kind of thing where you've got a band, if you need someone to fill in the spot, here's the charts, and, you know, if you get a good player, they can jump right in.
Was he successful? Because sometimes that's a good idea, sometimes it's not.
I think, you know, you got good musicians, you can make it happen.
Okay, yeah. True enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I went to Canada, and we had a lot of bad luck with that, because they just weren't quite up to snuff, and that's not a bad thing. They just weren't used to somebody pushing them that hard, and they didn't take learning serious. Hey, man, I sent you this music to learn it, not look at it. We get there, and you don't know it. So now I become a different person. I'm pissed off because I went out of my way to send it to you ahead of time. You said you don't learn it, and you get to the gig, you're not playing anything right. So
right, and it's almost the difference between you. You can send somebody a script and they could read it, But if you're an actor, you have to read it with the right feeling and emotion.
Right.
You can send somebody some music, they can read the notes,
right,
but they have to be able to capture that spirit. That
this is what I'm talking about. If they don't have what you need, like if like there's something simple like that feeling, like, you know, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
You gotta play with some feeling, man. Whatever the music is, and those guys, they don't, they, that's not who they are. You know, they're just slumming through stuff, and at the end of the night, where's my money?
Yeah. Okay. I knew a girl was a great sight reader, very talented, but I said, you know, let's improvise. And she couldn't.
She couldn't, no.
You know.
And you know what? You know, what do you think the reason was for it?
She never tried, for one.
Well.
You know, but she was so used to just reading and reading and studying, but she never loosened up and realized there's space in between all those notes.
This is what I'm saying. They get taught to play what they see and not what they feel. And I always give the advantage to the street player, because you can play with anybody based on how you feel. Now, is it smart to learn how to read? Of course. Would you find yourself in a lot of those situations? Maybe, maybe not. But it's a great skill set to have. But if you and I go to a club, you and I can go and just jam and just feed off of each other. But most guys like that are classically trained. They can't do it because they don't have the preparation for it. Because write it out.
It's
for
a conversation.
When
musicians get together, that's the language. It's a conversation.
True.
So if you're reading and somebody else is reading, there's no conversation. It's just two people reading.
True that. Yeah. So that's something that people should really think about, because I don't know. Were you at the club that time we had the two girls that came in and played the cello?
Yeah, and the little banjo.
And the little banjo. Yeah. They haven't been back since. But that was I don't want to use the word weird, but it was kind of different because neither one of them really knew how to improvise, and they didn't really have any formal training on how to play in a band
with
setting.
With others, yeah. But at the end of the day, we made some interesting music.
We did, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because we wanted them to be successful.
So you talked about CD Baby. That's how people can find your record?
CD Baby, Spotify, Amazon, Reverb Nation, Bandcamp, Pandora. I mean, most viable social media spots,
right,
all of us are usually going to be on.
And how can people find out about you? You talk about your website?
Yeah, they can go to samcockrell.com, and it's going to direct them right to the website where they can check out the music. And on Reverb Nation, they can hear actually all of the tracks.
Is there anything else you'd like to say or talk about?
You for inviting me out to do this. This is a great opportunity for people to see me and hear this kind of thing and see me in a different type of setting, you know. And we all have a moment, whatever that moment is. It may not be as big as that one, but at the end of the day, did you do anything significant? Did you preserve your music? Did you make any money? Did you make an impact? If you can answer yes to two of those things, then you success. And like we're having fun right now. You know, we're not at some place doing something we hate. We both enjoy playing music, and it's a beautiful thing. So, again, thank you for having me out, my friend.
Yeah,
thank
it's
you.
A beautiful day.
Thank you.
Well, what do you say we make some music?
Let's make some music, man.
All right.
Let's
make some music.
I ain't a swine, a thrive, foolish. A one, two, three. I believe I dust my broom. I'm gonna get up in the morning. I believe I dust my broom. I just quit the best girl I'm loving. Now my friend, he can have my room. I'm gonna write me a letter, send it to every town I know. I'm gonna write me a letter, send it to every town I know. I've been looking for you, baby, but I can't find you no matter where I go. I believe my time ain't long. I believe my time ain't long. I got to leave my baby. break of my happy home. Come on, Jim. I believe my time ain't long.